Space, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the sunny suburbs of Chicago. I really appreciate you joining me today for on RBN for people who can handle the truth. RBN's website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit Spingola.com, click on the radio schedule button, then the appropriate month. During the program, email your questions or comments to Spingola1@yahoo.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website, Spingola.com, or by going to Spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. Radio host Adam Kokesh, that's K-O-K-E-S-H, is trying to get people to march through D.C., Washington, D.C., with loaded rifles in a civil disobedience march. Radio host is, so he is attempting to lead this march to put the government on notice that we will not be intimidated. This reminds me of Frank Collins' attempted march through Skokie in 1978, which prompted President Carter to convene the Holocaust Commission. They are both from the tribe. Interesting. Inasmuch as Rockefeller and Carnegie facilitated and funded the Flexner Report, which drastically changed the health education system in America, would it be accurate to assume that the current pharmaceutical-centered industry might, in fact, be a method of fulfilling Rockefeller-funded ongoing depopulation program devised by Henry Kissinger, a Rockefeller minion? He did this in 1974. Hasn't medicine declined substantially since that date, after they imposed the initial Flexner-generated system? Rockefeller's population protocols would become part of Kissinger's SSM 200, which is the National Security Memorandum. In his address, Rockefeller said, and I quote, "To my mind, population growth is second only to control of atomic weapons as the paramount problem of the day," unquote. My guest today is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, the author of Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? Her websites are vitalitycapsules.com and drjenniferdaniels.com. Welcome to the program, Doctor.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and the listeners really appreciate the information that you share with us. And I'm sure that you have additional information that is just as provocative as the information that we've received from you before.
Yes, absolutely. Last time we kind of talked about the mind of the victim and what goes through the minds of, we use the word patients, but I want to get away from that word because using the word patient implies a duty and obligation to submit. So what goes on in the mind of the human being as they are submitting to this process of being murdered? So today we're going to talk about what's going on in the mind of the assassin. What goes on in the mind of a doctor that allows them to murder again and again and again, if not day in and day out, at least week in and week out? So I think the first thing would be to give people a perspective on the magnitude of the problem. And the reason you need this perspective is so that you can understand that the chances that your doctor is ignorant of the fact that he's harming you is just about zero. So
We do have a break. I'm sorry to interrupt, but we do have to take this commercial break. We'll be right back with our guest today, Dr. Jennifer Daniels, after a word from our sponsors.
Golden Stag Safaris invites you to hunt in one of Argentina's most beautiful scenarios. Enjoy the quietness of the Pampas and the five-star accommodation lodge. Excellent food and wine included in your stay. All the while hunting big game in the Argentine Valley, an area known for having a wide range of game, excellent trophies, the biggest stags in South America, as well as many other species. All gold medal quality. One-on-one guided hunts rental guns available with the highest quality scopes in every caliber, Land Rovers for transport, pickup at Buenos Aires Airport, and a private aircraft for charter is all available. Go to www.goldenstagsafaris.com to see photos and for more information. Again, www.goldenstagsafaris.com.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us at 1-877-605-9200.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Now, the reason that I called your attention to the projected march orchestrated by Adam Kokesh is that I think it is a psyop to provoke the government to react and take greater measures to seize our guns, and that is why I compared it to the march that was done by Frank Collin in 1978. Okay, back with our guest, Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you were talking about the mind of an assassin, and so that's very interesting, and I'm sure that you're absolutely correct.
Well, the assassin I'm referring to, of course, is your physician.
Right.
Yeah, so keep that in mind. All right, so here's some background. Back in 2010, Gary Null did some incredible research where he dug up all the figures of the people who were dying as a result of properly administered medical care as well as improperly administered medical care. And he came up with a number of 797,926 deaths a year. That was 2010. So I decided, well, let me go check on that and see if that's gotten any better, see if maybe the numbers are maybe moderated a bit. And I only checked a couple of categories, but the increase was just incredible. Bed sores, which only accounted for 17,000 deaths in 2010, in 2012, it was 25,000. And hospital-acquired infections was 88,000 back in 2010, and in 2012 it was 99,000. So this rate of growth is just, it's phenomenal. It's faster than inflation. And there's 11,000 more deaths from hospital-acquired infections and bed sores.
Now, what kind of infections would those be? And isn't there something that that people can do to, well, avoid hospitals, obviously? But
yeah,
isn't there something? Yeah, isn't there something that hospitals can do to prevent bed sores? My gosh, that seems like such a simple thing.
It does seem like a simple thing to you, and when I first entered medical school, I was like, that's stupid. But the problem with bed sores is the first part of the word, bed. And it's a procedure in hospitals to put all patients to bed. And so because of the way the hospitals run, patients are not allowed to walk around freely. And so especially older people are put in bed, confined to bed, tied up in restraints, four-point restraints. They now have had to make it more humane where they have to at least put lamb's wool against the person's skin and then the straps, the leather straps or whatever around that, and chain that to the bed. So a lot of elderly people are actually being physically restrained by jackets that have straps that are tied into their bed. This is for their own safety, so they don't fall out of bed, so they don't wander and get lost. This is what the hospital says. But then that effect is people are in bed long enough and with limited mobility, so they end up getting bed sores. And then if the family or the patient or whoever complains that these restraints are inhumane, then they're given chemical restraints. So then, in other words, you're going to get sleeping pills or Thorazine or some type of chemical to sedate them. And this prevents them from naturally turning or squirming or moving around or shifting their weight, and they end up getting what's called a pressure sore. That gets infected, and they die.
Yikes.
And so it's simply the physical act of being in a nursing home situation and being confined that creates these sores. But the doctor writes the order, first of all, putting the person in that institution, whether it's a hospital or a nursing home. And then the doctor writes a second order, which is the level of security that the person is subjected to. And so the level of security is, you know, confined to bed, confined to room, confined to chair, restraints as needed, restraints 24/7, you know, and this has been a big area of liability and a big area of litigation because families are shocked. They don't realize what they're consenting to when they put mom in a nursing home and they come and they see this person tied up in restraints in their feces. And, you know, then these sores start. And you don't really connect these bed sores with, one, with death, and, two, you don't connect them with the fact that your loved one is being restrained. You know, the relatives and patients are giving so little information that they don't have a cause and effect scenario here, and these deaths just happen. And people are, like, mystified. Oh, my gosh, oh, my relative died of a bed sore. I don't know.
Interesting.
But the concept here is that all medical care in the United States right now, institutionalized care, requires a prescription of a doctor. On an individual level, a doctor ordered all of this deadly, lethal stuff. And on a global level, there's a doctor, usually two or three levels up in the administration, that has to sign off on these deadly policies that then the doctors at a lower level are obligated to follow to keep their license, to keep their job, to keep being doctors. And so what I want to talk about today is what goes on in the minds of these doctors that allows themselves to be assassins and to be literally tools of murder. Uh-huh. And that's what I think we need to understand. Because if you understand what's going on in your doctor's mind, he's going to verbalize this. And when you hear these words, you realize what he's really saying is he's in the process of murdering you, and this is why it's okay. And so if you can understand these words when you hear them, then it'll put you in a better position to understand when you need to take evasive action.
Indeed.
So let's take a little look here at some more numbers. A patient sees on average 18 different doctors in a lifetime. This means that it takes 18 doctors to actively participate in or who could have reported or stopped the process that led to each murder by medicine. Okay, so it takes 18 doctors to kill a patient.
Wow.
Not doctor visits, but 18 different doctors. So you can just go through your little list right now. Okay, so yeah, I was born. We don't count the doctors who delivered you. Let's count your pediatrician as one, and just keep counting from then. And it's closer, the closer you are to the number 18, the closer you are to really being murdered by medicine. Next thing to understand is about 47.9% of Americans are taking a prescription drug in any particular month. This is even more devastating when you realize that many drugs that kill you, for example, Levaquin is the well-known antibiotic widely used. Levaquin can literally kill you 6 months after you take it.
Oh, my gosh.
By causing you to commit suicide. Yeah. So these drugs can result in your death long after you're taking them. So 47.9% of Americans are taking a prescription drug in any particular month. But how many took a prescription drug in any particular year? That's really the risk pool. So what this comes down to is if you realize that there are 850,000 doctors in the United States as of 2010, doing the math, you take the number murdered, 796, I'm taking the low number, not the high number, times 18, that's the number of doctors involved in each murder, and divided by the number of murders at present, then 16.8 deaths per physician per year. So each doctor in the United States, on average, some more, some less, assisted in the murder of or witnessed the murder of and remained silent in the murder of 16.8 people every year.
Wow. Somebody in the chat room just mentioned that in the 1970s in England, the doctors went on strike and the death rate dropped. When they were forced back to work, the death rate went up.
Same thing happened in California, absolutely. So this is true, and you need to really take it to heart. So what do they believe? First and fundamentally, the doctors believe the patient is helpless and cannot fight back. They've got to believe that. There's no way you can do this if you believe the patient can strike out and physically harm you. And that's a fundamental belief that, that doctors have. And most patients would never think of slapping their doctor because I'm not suggesting physical violence, but I am suggesting that because doctors feel this is a one-sided fight, that the patient is not going to strike back in a physical way, they feel physically very safe in doing this, and that's very necessary and very important. This is like the police. They've got the bulletproof vest. They've got all the arms. People are disarmed. They feel very confident, and this is an important piece of the confidence. The next thing the doctor believes is that he will not be investigated, and this is very, very important because investigation in the United States is a traumatic experience. Forget the penalty. And so he believes he won't be investigated. Next thing he believes is, if investigated, he will not be found guilty. And doctors are told this again and again and again. It's drilled into them. You follow the standard of care, and you will not be found liable or guilty in any way, on any level. You will not be financially responsible for compensating anyone. You will not be guilty of a crime. Your life will be uninterrupted. You will be kept whole. And this is what malpractice allows. So malpractice basically indemnifies and holds the doctor harmless. So his monthly pay does not deviate one penny because the patient got a settlement. And he is in no way, can never be held criminally responsible because he filed the standard of care, even though the standard of care itself is a deadly and criminal standard.
And just that standard of care protects them, so they really don't feel any responsibility to be careful about what they prescribe.
You can't be careful because following the standard of care itself is carelessness.
Right.
Yeah. If you're following the standard of care, it precludes your being careful because you cannot exercise judgment. You defend your judgment, and you follow this algorithm, an algorithm designed to murder.
Wow. So do you think this is part of the depopulation program that I was talking about at the beginning of the program?
Absolutely.
All righty. We do have a break. We'll be right back.
Listen up. This isn't some Detroit car commercial. And this isn't how we do it. Not in any America I know. We don't take away the rights and call it public safety. We don't burden folks with something called Obamacare and call it affordable. We don't take what you earn and call it a fair share. That's not America. That's not how it's done. In my country, in my America, earning has always been better than receiving. If that's what you believe, this is America, and we're about to show you how it's supposed to be done. Step up and be heard by participating at AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. Join us and stand up for the America you know at AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. That's how it's done. Now do it. You have a voice. Now use it.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. Theravim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from Theravim? Simple. Theravim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to Theravim.com. That's TERRAVIM.com. Theravim, the best supplements on earth.
If you would like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself from anything out of balance concerning cardiovascular or diabetic circulation problems, then this might be the most important ad you'll ever hear. It is possible to acquire a 100% organic nutritional supplement for a healthy heart and circulation, which works. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. For a long and healthy life, order today by calling 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. A healthy heart is a happy heart. Order online at heartandbody.com. That's heartandbody.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Dr. Jennifer Daniels. She is the author of Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? Her website is vitalitycapsules.com or drjenniferdaniels.com. It'll take you to the same place. And I asked you about the Rockefeller Depopulation Program right before the break, and you agree with me that this is one and the same objectives of depopulation, and when you consider that they also funded the Flexner Report, it's pretty easy to draw that conclusion.
Right, and the next step is they also funded the licensing boards to have them set up in each state, so they got to set up the criteria for the licensing board and how they judge doctors. And so the licensing boards do not judge doctors based on patient harm. That is not a criteria. The number one criteria is deviation from the standard of care.
Wow.
And so for the patients, this is why patients almost never get satisfaction when they go to a licensing board to complain that the doctor harmed them. Because that's not a valid complaint. The valid complaint would be that he deviated from the standard of care.
Hmm.
And so the standard of care is very harsh. It's very deadly. It kills hundreds of thousands of patients every year. And so it takes a lot of pressure to get doctors to stick with this. And another piece of pressure is if found guilty, the doctor's assured he will suffer no financial or personal penalty. And that's important. It's not going to affect his license, his ability to earn money. It's not going to diminish his income in any way. But that's the positive pressure to conform. What about the negative pressure? If he does deviate from the standard of care, even if he does not, in other words, if he does not kill as he's ordered to do, then he'll be shunned by his peers. And as a physician, being shunned by your peers is very—it's critical because it's other doctors that refer you, other doctors that you have to work with, and any doctor can report you. And once you're reported, that's it. You're ruined. So being shunned by your peers takes on, you know, an order of magnitude of issues.
Right. That's kind of a social kind of a thing, because the doctors stick together, they party together, and they have a certain image that they have to live up to. And then all of a sudden, if you're shunned, well, goodbye to everything, including
in my case, I didn't party with the doctors, I didn't associate with them, but you have to, you know, be very careful. You can't let rumors get started about you. You can't offend anybody. You can't criticize anybody. You can't speak out about anything, because if people start talking about you, if people start making phone calls, if people start making accusations, and there gets to be kind of a little rumble in the rumor mill, it can finish you off. It can finish you off with the hospital, and they can decide they don't want you on staff anymore. And if you're a hospital-based doctor, it means you can't schedule any surgeries because you can't get operating room time. Or it can, you know, make it so that when your prescriptions show up at the pharmacy, they don't want to fill them. They want to scrutinize them extra, or that maybe they'll decide, the board will decide, now you need to operate with supervision. Okay, now you have to pay a doctor to supervise you. Basically, it amounts to fee splitting. But in any case, it lowers your revenue tremendously. And you add that to doctors now graduating with as much as $500,000 in educational loans.
Whoa.
Great financial pressure.
Right.
The next thing,
so,
doctors,
so they have to continue to practice according to protocol in order to pay off their loans. Wow. Okay, and you mentioned
absolutely
that before. And
yeah, golden handcuff. So this is on the doctor's mind every single time he sees a patient. The other thing is, once the doctor has been in practice for a few years, some figured out in medical school, some take a few years of practice, they're like, oh, my God, this patient is dying because of what I'm doing. So the patient, at this point, the doctor has an awareness that what he's doing is harming the patient. So what does he tell himself now? Well, he tells himself he's not really killing the patient because they would have died sooner without the intervention.
Hmm.
And that sounds pretty sophisticated, and it is. That's a Madison Avenue excuse written by Madison Avenue and given to doctors in medical school. Because I said to in medical school, wait a minute, isn't this intervention here causing a disease that could kill the patient? I said, oh, you're a young doctor, you don't understand. Not really killing the patient. They would have died sooner without the intervention. So it's actually a success when the patient dies from therapy, because we know the patient would have died sooner without intervention. Why do we know this? Because of scientific studies.
And because we told you, right?
Well, I do say because we told you, but that doesn't wash, because now we're in the era of science. I mean, we have all these students in medical school, and I went, you had to complete a major in a hard science like biology or physics or chemistry. So we were all numbers people looking for proof, looking for evidence, looking for studies. And they would tell us there are studies. Not that they could point to any, but there are studies. Studies have been done. And the big trump card, this drug has been approved by the FDA, so we know it is safe and effective.
Right.
So yes, the patient died as a result of receiving the medication, but it's not really killing because the patient would have died sooner without the intervention.
Hmm.
So first doctor is...
People really believe that the FDA is there to benefit them and to help them, and of course, they really aren't. All right, we are going to a three-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a one-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Seed Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com, for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
Now more than ever, killing many viruses and bacteria in our homes and at work is important. With the flu epidemic running rampant, you need to protect yourself and your family the best you can with purified air. Our air purifiers not only kill many viruses and bacteria in the air, but on surfaces too. Our air purifiers will also kill molds, fungi, mildew, oxidizes chemical fumes and toxic gases, removes dust, pollen, pet odors, and smoke. We have portable units, HVAC and industrial size units. In our homes today, protect your family the best you can by calling 1-877-605-9200 or go to our online store at republicbroadcasting.org. Call today to receive your 10% off and free shipping on any home unit. 1-877-605-9200.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Dr. Jennifer Daniel. She is the author of Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? Her website is vitalitycapsules.com. Okay, please continue.
So the one doctor will say, well, I'm not really killing this person because they would have died sooner. And another doctor is more, you know, hooked into reality, says, yeah, I'm killing them with the therapy, but it's a permitted death as a person would have died sooner without therapy. I mean, it sounds like a nuance, but it really, there is a big difference here. The person who feels he's not really killing the patient would probably stop if he believed he was. The person who believes he's killing the patient with therapy, but it's a permitted death, that's the doctor. That's really dangerous doctor. The other, because if you confront him with the fact he's murdering people, he says, say, oh, no problem, that's my job, of course.
Wow.
And in medical school, all these excuses I'm giving you, the doctors don't make this up. These excuses are embedded in medical school from very early on because a toddler could see that people are being murdered here. You walk into the hospital. And I didn't know what that odor was because I was a city girl. I grew up in the city. I didn't grow up on a farm with a slaughterhouse. And, you know, I didn't know what death smelled like. But when you walk into a hospital, that's really what you're smelling. That's a smell of death. People are dying frequently. And so they were able to, because I grew up in the city, rationalize all this for me. I would inquire, oh, my God, what a strong odor is here. And say, oh, yes, well, that's just the way that is because some patients aren't cotton or whatever. I'm like, oh, okay. Then I would say, well, you know, we just gave this drug 2 days ago, and the patient's dead. Do you think that drug could have done it? Oh, no, not at all. It's the patient's disease. He didn't show up soon enough. Oh, okay. So we are given excuses at every step of the way frequently throughout medical school. And so all these excuses I'm going to give you are going to sound pretty outrageous, but these are excuses that are literally given to us word for word as medical students. Now, some of them we may have to make up a little bit along the way, but 95% of them, this is what we are told in medical school. Another thing is all the other doctors are doing it. It's the right thing to do. This is called the community standard. And as doctors, we're told that we need to make sure that our practice is pretty much in line with what the other doctors in our community would have done or would have felt is reasonable.
And, of course, if everybody's doing that, if all the doctors are doing that, then they seem to have credibility just in the fact that they're all, you know, following the same course.
Well, it's following the same course, but the thing is, it obscures the reality, which is people are troubled and they have doubts. And so you look around, you see what other doctors are doing, you realize it's harmful. I mean, I got to the point in my medical practice where I realized that if I did nothing, if I didn't refill a single prescription, if I didn't intervene at all, people would be at least 5 times better off than if I followed the standard of care.
Well, I think the numbers kind of corroborate that.
Actually more than corroborate that, because I can only see they would be 5 times better off, but my latest calculations are they would be 10 times better off.
Yes.
So it's again, if one doctor is sitting in one office looking out there on the world and seeing these patients in front of you, you say, my God, this is what I'm doing is not working out. I don't see where it's benefiting people. And what are we told? We're told you have to adhere to community standards. If you do something that's not what the doctor next door would have done, then you're guilty, definitely, of malpractice and deviating from the community standard of care. It's a community standard. So they get you then working in lockstep. And you know, why would they want to do this? This allows insurance companies to profit by creating a situation where one doctor is interchangeable with another, and they can literally jerk patients around and say, go see this doctor. Nope, stop. Go see that doctor. Nope, stop. See that doctor. And this way they can slash doctors' prices and pay them nothing because they become a commodity. They're interchangeable.
Right.
But in medical school, we don't realize that we're being set up for this by giving this. Well, other doctors are doing it. It's the right thing to go ahead and do it.
Sure. And it's the same kind of herd mentality that a lot of Americans have when they recognize that their government is bombing another country. They think, oh, well, those people are, yes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The media gives a false sense of consensus when really there is no consensus. And so all I like is the end times are coming. The world's going to end soon. It's going to end. It's always going to end in 1 or 2 years. And the reason for that is to get the person to believe that they can remain passive. They just have to endure for 2 more years, and then it'll spontaneously resolve. It'll all go away. And that's not true. But you have to throw up this end time story every so often to keep people from actually rebelling. And people believe that things are as bad as they are, whatever that might look like, and that it's going to continue for another 50 years or 200 years or the rest of their life unless they do something. Well, you could have an uprising. So you have to give people the idea that the present situation is temporary or that everyone else is agreeing with it. And so if they decide to rebel, there would be no consensus in any way.
Hmm.
And so and the doctors, they're in a similar situation. The doctors also feel it's his duty. I have to do the standard of care. I have to give this medication. This is my duty to give this medication. And never mind, every time you give this medication, the patient generally dies within 3 to 10 minutes. That would be advanced cardiac life support, by the way.
Oh, right.
The next thing he's got to believe is he's doing the right thing. How does he know it's the right thing? Well, it's what they taught in medical school. It's backed by research. So he believes that he's doing the right thing, even though his observation tells him otherwise.
Right. And of course, under the circumstances, of when you're an intern, you're worked, almost 24/7, so that you really don't have a chance to think about what is going on.
Exactly.
You're tired.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
I remember I was on call one time. It was in my, 40th hour of call, so I was getting pretty raggedy there, right? And I didn't realize what was happening, but all the other residents would not do their work all day long. They would goof off. And in the evening, they would give me all of their work to do. And so my beeper rang continuously from 5 p.m. to 7 a.m. the next morning. I was literally running, answering every call, putting out all these fires. Well, one night, this is exactly what happened. It was like 4:30 in the morning, and I said, man, God better help these patients because I sure can't. I mean, I was just literally wiped out at the end of my rope. And then I had to think, wait, what did I just say? That I'm not going to help these patients? And back then I felt that medical care was helpful. And I'm like, you mean I would let these people die just because I'm overtired and need 10 minutes of sleep? I'm like, that's an awful situation to be put in. Mm-hmm. And I actually reflected and thought, wait, somebody is deliberately putting me in this situation to desensitize me. And to make me feel it's okay to harm patients, to make me feel that it's not in my best interest to help patients. And so that's exactly what it is. It's a psyop, if you want to call it that, or a psychological operation being played on young, naive people. And that's why medical schools insist on only accepting people who went straight through high school, college, and straight into medical school, so they don't have a chance to have any real-world experiences, because everything you're taught in medical school is a lie. And if you have even the most trivial real-world experience, let's say you got married or let's say you had a baby, then you would know the stuff they're telling me is not true.
Right.
So that's part of the system. Now, the next thing a doctor needs to understand is it may be bad for the patient, but it's good for society. On average, someone's going to benefit. And so they tell us, doctors, that statistically, people who take XYZ drug do get better. Now, the fact that the last 10 patients you saw on XYZ drug got worse should not deter you from continuing to offer XYZ drug, because it's a future benefit out there for somebody. And so the doctor's told that, on average, this drug is very helpful. It's just that your particular patient might not be a good sample.
When a person decides that they want to go to medical school, I'm sure that they have very good intentions. They want to help people. I'm sure that that was your intentions, that you wanted to help people. But it's the training and all of the exhaustive internship and everything else that just kind of brings this whole herd of doctors to the side of the depopulation program.
Well, they don't even realize they're there. They are told that the way to help people is by following the standard of care.
Sure. Now, how could a lay person learn about what the standard of care is so that they can change what is happening to them? Well, by not going to a doctor, but...
You're missing the point here.
Well, I'm asking a question.
The standard of care is sacred, and it's actually secret. I've even tried to Google standard of care on the internet to find out what it is, particularly diseases. And you got to go through at least 10 clicks and 10 different frames and really dig deep to find it. And they have it parsed out in parts. In the standard of care, you have diagnostic tests that are done for certain symptoms. Then after diagnostic tests, you have the second level of diagnostic tests. Then you have the first level of therapy. Then you have the second level of therapy. If the first level doesn't work, of course, the first level never works. Then you have the third level of care in case they're still alive after the second level of care. And then you have them being referred. And you cannot find that on the Internet. They do not write that on the Internet.
Okay. Let me
find is bits and pieces that are unrelated.
Let me re-ask the question. It was actually a question from the chat room, and it is, please ask Dr. Daniels how we, as lay people, can learn specifics of standard of care. I have a friend whose wife was doctored to death, and we'd like to know if standard of care was followed. This might change what we are doing to try to deal with her murderers.
I'm guessing, I'll bet you, Dallas Adonis, the standard of care was followed.
Okay.
Deviations from standard of care is only responsible for 12% of all murders by medicine. So, one way for you to get at this would be to get a copy of your medical record. Start there. First thing is go back to the very beginning of your medical record, whatever it is, and it'll say, blah, 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 complained of these and those symptoms. Then you go on the Internet and you Google these and those symptoms and what would be medical therapy for those symptoms. And then you keep going and see if the treatment for those symptoms matches in any way the treatment that she got. If it does, then she was getting the standard of care.
Okay.
And then you're going to see, keep reading, if she developed more symptoms, of course, from the medication, but they'll tell you it's from her disease. And then you Google those symptoms and see if the treatment for those symptoms is the treatment that she got, if it's a standard of care. And I'm pretty sure you're going to find it was. Now, the next thing to go back and do, which is something you might not think to do, is to look up each therapy she got and see if the complications of that therapy, if the profile of the complications of that therapy match what she later experienced, including her death. And I think you will find the answer is yes. So you're going to find yes, she was treated by the standard of care, and you're going to find yes, it did kill her.
Okay. All righty. Thanks for answering that question.
Yes, because that can be confusing.
Right.
Now, the next thing to look at, which is really what I've been advocating, is that we need to eradicate malpractice or develop a similar parallel criminal system where any time a patient dies, it is a criminal matter and somebody goes to jail. We just have to figure out who. So if we then say every medically caused death is homicide, period, it's homicide, a human being deliberately committed an act prescribing a medical therapy, and that purposeful act led to death. Now, we can say the doctor didn't mean it. Okay, accidental homicide, fine, but it's homicide. And so that's what we need to do. And that would be the answer to this person's situation. He's going to be very frustrated because he's going to find out, if he digs long enough, he looks at every drug his mother was on, whatever, he's going to find out that, yes, her medicine did indeed kill her. Absolutely it did. But he's also going to find, I'll bet, that it was according to the standard of care, and it was medication the doctor was, according to standard of care, required to provide.
Right.
And that goes on to the concept that may be bad for this patient, but it's good for society. And so, on average, someone's going to benefit. The next thing is, it's the best thing for the victim. This is what the doctor tells himself. It's the best thing for the victim. This is the best available therapy. When better therapy becomes available, we'll have continuing medical education, but this is the best available therapy. The next thing the doctor feels is he's obligated to provide the lethal therapy. I just can't tell you how many times I've been either in medical practice or as a resident, actually as a resident, and the attending writes an order, and I'm like, oh, boy, that's it. That patient's going to die. This is going to kill him. It's going to kill him. And sure enough, it killed him. And there's no investigation. The doctor gets paid. The hospital gets paid. The family is so grateful everything was done that could have been done. And boom, it just slides by. And it's like big bucks payday for everybody.
Right.
Except me, the resident. I'm still getting paid sub-minimum wage. But it was just an incredible wonder to behold. Now, as a resident, I mean, I was more competent than most residents and apparently than most attendings. I could see when this prescription that was just written is most likely going to murder this patient. I was like, you know what? I'm not writing that prescription. I'm not writing that order. The attending wants that order. He's got to write it. And sure enough, every time, without exception, the attending wrote the order. And if I would even attempt to say, well, wait a minute, maybe we should take a second look at this, or possibly blah, 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 the attending would berate me for questioning anything.
Right, because you were just, after all, a resident. What would a resident know that the attending wouldn't know? I mean, that, yeah. Oh, goodness.
So The next thing he has to believe is it's the best thing for the victim. Like I said, this is the best available therapy. He also has to believe he's obligated, must provide a lethal therapy, especially in a hospital setting. I mean, hospitals have written their own protocols based, of course, on their profitability and their bottom line, but they've written their own protocols. And as a doctor practicing medicine, you're like, whoa, the hospital has a protocol? Okay, where's the protocol? Boom, rubber stamp it onto the patient's chart and just sign it. Okay, great, done. Requirement satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
When actually that protocol may be in itself lethal. Now, there are rare cases when hospital protocols do coincide with the better health of patients. But I do say rare, and that's in cases where patients have litigated and won judgments that are very sizable.
Wow. All righty, we are going to a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
The 5 self-evident truths of the Declaration of Independence are the standing definition of our republican form of government. Each unalienable right has an attached duty because we are all created equal. Like the right, the duty is permanent and non-transferable. There can be no paper to lien the right and no paper to waive the duty. Deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed does not mean if you can think of it, you can consent to it. Truly, it names a condition where a right must be held without violation of its duty by both parties who can then consent. Our grand jury has been destroyed without the consent or the right. Return the grand jury customarily impaneled by the elected county sheriff and one where people can appear with information. McGilvery Machine Company, Reading, Michigan. Innovative research and development of prototype industrial equipment since 1988.
Answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plan, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with the resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
Time to relax and unwind. What better way to do so than with Santa Barbara Bells? For over 25 years, our wind chimes have been helping people to relax and enjoy life. Turn your home environment into a pleasurable experience. From the small overture chime to the large super bass, you will find just the right chime to enjoy. All wood, strings, and cordage are protected for long life, and all parts are rust-proof. You have 10 sizes to choose from. To see and hear more of the chimes, go to santabarbarabells.com or call us at 805-733-1513. Santa Barbara Bells is currently having a springtime sale. Come to the website and save up to 50% on all of our chimes. santabarbarabells.com.
Our guest today is Dr. Jennifer Daniels. She is the author of Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? Her website is vitalitycapsules.com. All righty. Please continue. We do have a couple questions from the chat room, but I don't want to, you know, interrupt your train of thought with the questions right now.
The Unless next thing is a big one, and this is huge because this is what allows a murderer to murder again and again and again. And that's dehumanizing the victim. And so the doctor feels he's superior to the patient. He is a doctor. This individual, this human being, is not a human being. It's a patient. He is a doctor providing needed therapy for a patient. He's not a person murdering another person. And so if we can dehumanize the patient, put the patient on a different level, not, this patient's not a human being, this patient's not capable of understanding, so there's nothing to explain here, and the therapy is needed for a patient. So this is needed therapy for a patient's medical condition. This is not murder. Of course, the patient's going to die as a result of the therapy, but that's not the point. What's going on here is he sees himself as a doctor providing needed therapy. And so we have euphemism for basically a murderer administering the lethal blow is what he's doing. But because medical school and Madison Avenue have renamed this, instead he's a doctor administering needed therapy to a patient. So you get that? Doctor administering needed therapy for a patient. He is not a murderer administering the lethal blow. And so when your doctor tells you this is needed therapy, that's when your alarm bells really should go off.
Right, and that kind of goes along with one of the questions in the chat room was, and the question is Dr. Daniels, tell us how doctors are taught to separate themselves from empathy while simultaneously taught to regard their practice as just business. Doesn't this indoctrination teach them to regard people as mere animals / customers? And isn't this attitude reinforced by hospital administrators?
Okay, this is a very complex question. First of all, the patient is not the customer. That is the problem. If you murder customers, you don't get paid. So the patient is absolutely not the customer. And that is one of the keys, by the way, to avoiding murder by medicine, is being a self-pay patient and letting the doctor know that if you die, he doesn't get paid. That will totally change the care you get. But you show him an insurance card, he knows if he murders you, he gets paid, and when you die, the insurance company will produce 10 more people just like you. So you want to be a customer. That's exactly what you want to be. Doctor, I'm not a patient. I'm a discriminating customer. I decide, and I pay, or I refuse to pay. That totally changes your status and elevates you actually to above the level of the doctor, because now you're a customer. He is your servant. You are deciding. And so if you have a choice between being a customer or a patient, you want to be a customer. So the customer has choices. The customer makes decisions. Patients don't.
All righty. Okay. Well, that is a good clarification then. To discriminate between a customer and a patient. Okay. We're going to our 60-second top-of-the-hour break. I'm sorry. We'll be right back after station ID.